Hello and welcome to I Wish I Knew That About Songwriting, the show that brings you tips, tricks and techniques that we wish we knew as young songwriters. We're going to focus on interviews, resources and subjects that you will find useful and you can use them today. Thank you so much for listening and welcome to the show. So it begins. I'm here in Australia and I'm here in a wonderful flat in Collingwood in central Melbourne with a man that I met last week, and he reached out to the podcast, I would say a couple months ago, and sent in a video of him singing. Welcome, Ryan. How are you doing?
Mate, thank you. It's good to be here. Thank you for inviting me on the podcast. I'm excited to do it.
Do you know why you're here and why you're valuable to me, actually?
We had a good chat the other day.
We did.
Had a good lunch. I don't know. Enlighten me.
Yeah. So what I wanted to do, because we met up the other day, grab lunch. We talked for like 4 hours.
This man was five.
It was five. This man was kind enough to, he also bought me a book, which is quite impressive. And that will sit on my shelf. And I'll always remember this time in Melbourne with you. But I thought even better than that, you had some really insightful things. So if you could just explain your songwriting, where are you right now?
At the moment, I'm about 2 weeks out from releasing. I've been writing for about 3 months, just doing heaps of tracks and whittling them down to sort of 5 to 10 that are, you know, reasonably okay. And I'm kind of just, I would say that I'm just a beginner, really. I've kind of just broken through that wall that I had for maybe 10 years of perfectionism. And I'm at a point where I can actually release now, can actually get it done.
10 years of perfectionism.
Yeah, man. I mean, in that time, I did some stuff. So I did get some stuff out there, but it was always like with a band or with some kind of diffused responsibility in some capacity. So I was always, I call it like hiding in some capacity, or it was under some obscure name and I wouldn't let people know about it or something like that. And that was all just perfectionism. So I'm kind of at a point now where the actual metric of success is releasing, rather than being perfect, because I know now that it's the iterative process that will get me the goods over time, rather than kind of planning it all in advance and then projecting forward what should it be, whatever. It's just fucking doing it. So that's where I'm at.
Love it. And I know that you've been on tour. You've been on tour the UK, Europe. You've done the whole Sugar Crashes with like 60 Aldi donuts in stations.
Little donuts.
Little donuts. Yeah. There you go. I'd like to know more about your perfectionism. How do you see it and how does it affect you?
Yeah, dude, this is kind of like a traumatic topic to talk about, because it's kind of like wanting so badly to be successful, to be a good songwriter, to be an artist, to be a success so bad that it stifles you from ever really making any progress, because you're stuck at step one. Because every time you take a step, you know, you're judging yourself against like Ed Sheeran or whoever the best in the world are, and you think, oh, this is nowhere near that good. And I can't release anything if I am that great. I studied music at uni. Everyone thinks I'm supposed to be good. And because I don't feel that I live up to that expectation, I feel like my ego has created this impression in other people that I'm supposed to be good. And if I release something bad, then it will be kind of like, you know, I'll be seen to be a liar or seem to be kind of, I don't know.
That makes perfect sense. So you feel like you are directly comparing yourself to the best in the world before you've even, what, finished a song or released it?
Before I've even finished it, in the past, okay? Past tense, I'm not doing that now. But I remember, man, I think we were talking about this last week. I remember watching like Ed Sheeran at Wembley or something like that. And I'd been trying to like songwrite, this is a few years ago, and just feeling so shit. And then going to get shitloads of pizza and just fucking eating that and numbing myself, and then going to sleep being like, I'll do it tomorrow. So.
Really? So you went to see Ed Sheeran at Wembley and you were so upset, which I can relate to. This is not from a judgment place. You were so pissed off almost because you weren't there that you had to sugar crash on pizza and then.
Dude, it's weird. I saw him on YouTube, but
YouTube, so you didn't even get the. Okay, I wonder why you're over there, but yeah.
Yeah, but I wouldn't even call it pissed off. Like, I wasn't angry or anything. I just felt so bad about myself for whatever reason that I wasn't there. Then I'm like, oh, this guy's the same age as me. I should be doing this. And it seems so far away, but.
Because if I said to you, in order to be on the same pathway as someone you respect, all you need to do is write a song by next week. That would be doable, right?
Yeah.
But I'm like you, I'll put their whole journey and their whole career inside a week in my head, or inside much less time. Like, why haven't I got it now? And actually that goalpost moves. Because say the time it takes you to get to where Ed Sheeran is, he would have moved on.
Yeah.
So do you feel like it's an element of like beating yourself up as well?
Yeah, it's definitely beating myself up. I was talking to my mate earlier about this today. It's kind of seeing some external manifestation of something and thinking that is the goal, rather than the goal being what, I mean, I could be as good as Ed today by just doing what he does, which is probably write a song, do some other shit. I use the analogy, I think about Blink, like Blink 182, because like I grew up with that band. I think of Tom, his whiny, like nasally voice, which is very much associated with like punk rock now, like, hey mom, or whatever.
Well, pop punk.
Pop punk
rules,
yeah.
It. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you saw so many bands coming out in the late 2000s, whatever, even now probably, that put on that voice thinking this is the punk rock voice. But that's not the punk rock voice. Tom is doing his voice. He's not doing a voice. So if you want to be like Tom, do your own voice. You know what I mean? So it's like, if I want to be like Ed is not like all the other shit that he's done. Ed is not like O2 Arena or whatever. Ed is like writing a song every day, getting better over time, networking, playing shitloads of gigs. That's what he's actually doing. You know what I mean?
Mm.
There's a difference when you can change your perception from the external to like the sort of basic things that they're actually doing. I can win today. I can be as good as him today if that's what he's doing. You know what I mean? And then over time, it accumulates and builds up and you will reach, maybe I'll never reach that. I don't know. And I don't care. But over time, you can move in that direction by doing the daily actions. If you kind of use that as your baseline, that's what you're trying to copy. That's what you're trying to achieve. Does that make sense?
It does make a lot of sense. And I think I'm trying to get to the bottom of that self-criticism. And you joked with me that you once did a mindfulness retreat. You turned up and there were monks there.
Yeah.
And before, it was a silent retreat, you told me. Do you want to go into that story? Because it's quite funny.
Yeah, yeah. So this,
in a sad way.
Okay, so this one wasn't the silent retreat. This was, I went to Newbury Buddhist Monastery in Victoria where I live. And I went up there to kind of connect with God or whatever, spirituality. And I hadn't really had any interactions with the people there beyond like the sort of normal pleasantries. And then on day one, I'm there in the kitchen area in the morning where we're getting our food. And I just remember thinking, for some reason, I was just like, these monks hate me.
And dude, thank you for telling that again, because I remember we were walking just around the corner or something like that, and I just laughed. It wasn't out of judgment or because it was funny. It's like, I was like, that is so me as well. Like, I walk into a room, people I've never met who know nothing about me as I've been doing this whole time in Australia, and the first thing I'm thinking is, they're gonna hate me, this isn't gonna go well, you should just go home and sleep.
Yeah. The crazy thing about that is these people in particular, this isn't like your like run-of-the-mill like construction work or whatever. These are monks. Their whole life is dedicated to building that spiritual capacity, to extending the capacity to love, to give, to connect. If anybody doesn't hate me, it's these monks. You know what I mean?
Definitely.
So I'm not like at some fucking, I don't know, industry networking night where everyone's like in their ego or whatever.
Yeah.
It's a different thing.
And we talked about how I think we should avoid extremes in our day-to-day life, but that's how we learn. And that is such an example of an extreme. Like, the most compassionate people you could probably find in this continent,
yeah,
you've decided in your mind that they hate you.
Mm.
How does that translate to your day-to-day now? And even in your songwriting, where does that work for you, the self-worth element?
Yeah, it's. I guess this is something that is learned through spiritual practice. And I mean that in the non-hashtag spirituality kind of way. Like, it's learning to detach from external validation, which is extremely hard. Like, it's been extremely hard for me.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe it is for everyone, I don't know. And kind of understanding that whatever you are, like, at a baseline, you are enough. Maybe you have some kind of like obscurities. You've got some weird behaviors that have come about as a result of some sort of trauma. They're just kind of reactionary defense mechanisms that you have that cause people to act in, you know, they react in like to that externally. But it's like, now when I kind of go out into the world, and this does extend to songwriting, it's trying to come from a place where like I say to myself, actually, I was telling you, I have this hypnosis where I go over this in my head. Like, I don't have to be, there's no reason to be funny. There's no need to be funny. There's no need to be intelligent. There's no need to be witty. You are enough. You're more than enough. And if people don't like the real you, that's okay. But still, as so long as you're being real or as authentic as you possibly can, sure, that's fine if they don't like you. If they don't like me when I'm acting on a superficial level, I mean, that's okay too. But that's when it actually affects me because I'm externally trying to go out and gain validation through wittiness or insightfulness or, you know, you like to think of yourself as pretty smart or whatever. But that's when it hurts for whatever reason because you're acting in the ego and the ego gets hurt.
That's brilliant because first of all, being enough, that is a bit kind of like hashtag spirituality. People are building these really expensive coaching retreats in Marbella or whatever off that. But it's really simple. And even said hypnosis, I'd say it's even more simple. Positive self-talk, that you're worth it. And when it comes to your writing as well, that I think that applies a lot is that people don't need to be more than what they are at that point.
Mm.
Of course, at that point then brings in, well, where do I want to be and how hard have I worked to get there? But that was the Blink-182 thing is like, he didn't mean to be iconic. He did his version of him.
Yeah.
Same with Ed Sheeran, from what we know.
Dude, and here's the weird thing about all of these kind of, I guess it's like spiritual truths or whatever. Sometimes you can't arrive at them until you've really tried the other way. Maybe you have spent a lot of time trying to be somebody, trying to be funny, trying to be witty or whatever. And you get to this point eventually. Maybe this is a limiting belief itself. Maybe you can just get there without having to experience that pain. But I don't know. It's kind of that thing you said before, like, you know, we learn at the extremes. So the only way that I've been able to arrive here is by living a life, a lot of life, where I am trying to externally seek validation in some way or live up to some external standards. And then kind of when you come back, maybe you actually do come back with some of those things and you do incorporate some of the better lessons you learned or some of the better masks that you tried on or elements of those masks. You can come back and kind of, they are incorporated into your personality because they stick. There's this saying like the good shit sticks, right? Have you heard that? If you read a book.
I like that though.
It's like if you read a book and you like, oh, I can't remember this book, but you remember one or two concepts. That's the good shit. That's the shit that like the stuff that resonated with you at the moment, at that time. Kind of like you go to these extremes and you can come back with the good stuff. And if you don't come back with anything, maybe there was no good stuff in it. But at any rate, you come back with the lesson. So it's always good.
But I think the way that people can learn without having to have been to the extremes is these conversations. Where you are, have someone who's been to the extremes like me, fuck things up, come back with the shit sticking on us. But how do we explain and give out that explanation of what they can practically do? Because I was even listening to the people I'm staying with, she was listening to an audiobook about parenting.
Yeah.
It's like, how do you teach young people to make good decisions when they have experience? Which is that catch 22 impossible thing. Whereas I think you just being vulnerable today and going, I suffer with this, I struggle with this. Self-worth is huge. That leads to perfectionism, which then leads to other things that can be quite damaging. And you talked about it really beautifully. When you're writing, you find you're too close to the song to be able to change it sometimes.
Yeah, man. So that was a lot of it. That was a lot of it. So I've got like probably over an album's worth of tracks that I just, there was no external reference points. So there was no external rules that I was trying to apply. And I was just trying to do that like music school lesson of just like be yourself, express yourself totally. And then it was just like, it took like a year. It took a long time to eventually get these little rhymes or whatever, right? And maybe it's good, maybe it's not. I don't know. But I'm way too invested in it, way too close to it, like for that to be any kind of cohesive thing. And I have showed some people it. And when I listen back to it now with kind of like a different frame of reference, having written in a different style, a more objective style, it is kind of a little bit whack. There's these crazy, like long intros and melodic parts, and it goes into this weird, like pre-chorus. And some of it's good, but it's just so self-indulgent, so overly self-involved that it's kind of, it's, I think it would be difficult for people to connect with. Although it is kind of like me expressing myself, which goes to another point, man. Why I'm like, there's this kind of cliche thing in songwriting or in the arts in general. That we are just writing to express ourselves, to be real. But I would argue that we're also trying to do it to connect with other people or to evoke something in other people, some sort of catharsis in them. And when it's too self-involved, may not be relatable.
Beautifully said. And I would even say that any artist that we look up to, which has become the standard of how we aspire in terms of quality, we look at an artist and go, they are a major label. That's how good I should be. that artist is an asset, a person who's decided to take their music and turn it into an asset through touring, through streaming. So we can't pretend that our songwriting that we do for ourselves is even in the same category as a financial asset used for marketing and promotion, I think. But in your mind, would you rather write something that's self-expression, or you're now at a point where you do want to connect with other people?
It's kind of like the Venn diagram of self-expression, connection. I want to be in that little middle part. And I think that's where, I think that is, it's kind of like they're the two extremes as well. It's like purely objective writing that isn't really a true representation of who you are on one extreme, and then fully like solipsistic self-expression on the other side. And I think the magical place is in the middle, the Venn overlap of the two circles. You know what I'm talking
yes.
about? Yeah. So, yeah.
I could maybe put an analogy whereby, talk about boxing and yeah. songwriting. When you're working on a bag on your own without any rules or form, you're just hitting the bag and getting that fitness, getting that feeling, getting that expression. But people won't pay to watch that. Yeah. They'll pay to watch you go into a ring and work within constraints
yeah.
for that commercial process. Right. So you're still boxing, but you're having to think. And you talked about it earlier, creative bubble water, right? I actually thought, oh, maybe we shouldn't have sparkling water. But I thought that creating within constraints, has that been something you found more rewarding?
Yeah, man, definitely. That is like for me, and I'll probably evolve past this at some point, or maybe I'll just internalize the constraints
yeah,
I've been
talking
about before.
Yeah, you don't need to evolve past it. It's the whole point of this show is, someone described it as, you've helped me. So when I coached someone, they said, you've helped me see my invisible toolkit. It's not about me giving you anything new. It's me giving you an awareness of, you can turn this on and off. You can turn this on and off. This affects the song like this. And the whole goal is for you to know how to write something really self-expressionist, all the way to a really kind of squared away, almost like someone sending you a brief. So you're learning.
Yeah.
We all are, hopefully.
I do like that. I really resonate with that brief idea. It's kind of like the paint by numbers thing we mentioned the other day and you brought up again today.
Can you explain that? Because I think you put it really well. The way I had it, so to give people context, we were talking about when we're in a state of creativity that we like in terms of the output, what we end up with is often to do with being in a state where we are both being creative and critical in tandem. As we talk about on the show, creative and the critic, you end up in a place where you're writing great songs in an hour and a half, couple hours, you're in flow. And then what I thought was great is we talked about, well, how do we create a kind of framework for ourselves when we're not feeling naturally in the flow, naturally creative? So that's why we talked about paint by numbers, whereby we can almost like put our feet where they need to be and our hands where they need to be, like that game of Twister, right? Left hand on green, right hand on this. And you, oh, and I'm back in my state.
Yeah, man. So for reference, this book called The Art of Learning by Josh Waitzkin. Have you heard of that?
I don't, because you said—
We talked about it the other day.
You read it extensively, so I think it's wonderful.
Yeah, so in this book, Josh Waitzkin is talking about I think it's Kasparov, the chess grandmaster, or one of the guys, whatever. And he's talking about Kasparov has this certain style of playing, this flow state that he can get in, which is his most authentic expression on the chessboard. But sometimes, inevitably, he's not in that state, but he understands it so objectively as well as kind of internally, subjectively, it can come out when he's in the flow state. He understands what constraints he's putting on his chess game when he's playing like that. He understands objectively. So when he's not in the flow state, he can kind of jumpstart the car, so to speak, by playing objectively how he knows he would play if he was in the flow state.
That's fascinating, right? And it's so applicable to writing, I think. That's what my pilgrimage, you put a spiritual vernacular in my head, is to give people the awareness of the tools that they have as writers, whether they know about them or not. Some of them are at the extreme ranges, but to give them the awareness so that they can do the whole, if I need to be in the state of being great, creative, at my potential, that takes a lot of work, right? But then if I want to get there or as close as I can, I believe that's through an awareness of how we write songs, how we connect with people even.
So what that looks like in songwriting, like where I'm at the moment, I'm still kind of discovering, I guess through the process of doing this, I guess you eventually, and I have to an extent, you kind of start to understand objectively, what is your style? What is Ryan's style? What is Jamie's style? Like what kind of themes do you generally tend to go towards when you're writing? What kind of sub themes, what kind of imagery, what kind of metaphors are you using generally when you are in that flow state and you feel like you're really performing at a high level? And so what I'm doing at the moment is I'm looking at one artist in particular and I'm analyzing, what does this dude write about? Like, what exactly, because it's not everything in the world. So there is a limitation on what he's writing about. So I'm analyzing that music, understanding the themes, kind of melodies, sub themes, tenses, verbiage, all the stuff that he writes in. And so that when I want to, like, when I want to copy that style, I guess, I can write like this guy would, because it kind of fits the constraints of what he does. Now, I'm not actually one, that's not actually me. I'm writing in that style right now because it's a learning process. But through that, this is kind of a recurring theme in this, through that process, I will bring back a couple of things that might actually be aligned with my authentic expression. And then I might write another album using another artist as a main reference. And then over time, with multiple iterations, I will arrive at, what do I really like writing about? Like, what are the things that really resonate with me? And what are the words, phrases, imagery, metaphors that will be a true expression of me?
What do you think they are now? What would be the words, metaphors, things you want to express currently?
So where I'm at the moment, there seems to be a lot of driving metaphors that come in, like cars and driving, for some reason that really resonate with me. I think there's some kind of freedom subconsciously.
That movement, right? You want to...
Yeah.
Because our conversations, you know, this is actually maybe a good time to talk about it, but we talked about the idea of shadow careers. Would you mind just explaining how you explained it the other day? Because
it's
great.
Yeah. So it could be... So you want to be a songwriter, but realistically, maybe you're afraid of that for some reason. You are afraid that if you pursue this career, it might not work out, or there might not be any money in it, or you know, people won't think you're cool, or whatever it is. And so instead of doing that, you align yourself with a kind of analogous career that might look similar, share a lot of the same characteristics of, you know, a songwriter or a performing musician or something like that, but is not it. For example, you want to be a performer, you want to be a rock star, but you start working at a record label instead. And you justify it to yourself by being like, well, you know, I still can write on the side, but I'm around music and I'm doing this. And, or maybe you start a songwriting podcast. Not saying that you're doing that.
Songwriting coach, right? Yeah.
Songwriting coach. No, but it could be, realistically, that is the kind of stuff that people go towards. And I'm not obviously saying that about you.
No, but this is the beauty of it, is that you were saying it about me. And like we talked about earlier, the monks hate me. The monks must hate me. But it made me think, like, well, why am I doing that? And even in our conversation, that time it felt, I was like, well, wait, why am I doing this? Why am I here? Why am I a writer? Why am I doing a podcast? And that's the idea of a shadow career, is like, maybe I actually want to be an artist.
Yeah, do you?
That stands on stage. Like, I'm not anymore. But because I thought about it since we spoke, and like, cause being in a band ended for me the end of last year, and I love performing, but it felt bittersweet. And I kind of said goodbye to performing for now when I saw the Red Hot Chili Peppers, because like you talked about with Ed Sheeran, when I see a live band, or Post Malone, it was amazing as well. Fall Apart.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, that's a song, right? I said goodbye to it then. And I thinking about like loving coaching, but really wanting to produce people, wanting to do this podcast, wanting to build a space where the first thing that someone hears when they start to think about songwriting is this show, is your insight, is other people's insights, and like how you make money from it. How do you enjoy it? How do you get good at it? How do you build relationships with people? You know, that's what is a passion. And
yeah, dude, you know what? A really interesting thing. I had a conversation with a friend yesterday, and with regard to songwriting, I've always been, I'm coming out of this now, but I've always been kind of one foot in, one foot out, because I'm like, the fear is, oh, if I do this, I'm not going to make enough money or whatever. But the question you have to ask yourself is a really good song a highly valuable commodity? Will people pay you a lot of money for a really good song? And the answer is yes.
It is yes.
So,
yeah.
I mean, you on the front end, if I got a job at a digital marketing agency or something, I'm going to be making 50, 60 grand a year baseline immediately. Not going to happen with songwriting. But dude, I only have this one fucking life. And if I don't do this, if I'm not trying to fulfill myself, fulfill my basest inner desire in this way, it will feel like a life half lived. So you know, truth is, really good songwriters are a very valued, highly valued commodity. And if you can get really good at songwriting, you can make a lot of money. So, you know, it's just like, it's different pay scale. It's like, I think of it like The Sims. You ever play The Sims?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, you get like your entry, if you're like, you know, you get your entry level job as a burglar. And then
oh, yeah, that's flooding back. Dude, yeah.
And then the promotion from that is like maybe like a, I don't know, bank, a clerk that steals from the cash register. I don't know.
Like you right now working for NAB.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. That's you're a banker, yeah, yeah.
Yes, exactly. Stealing money from people's accounts, just transferring to myself. But then, you know, the end result is you're a like super villain. So, it starts with burglar and you become super villain. And different job paths in that game have different kind of like you can make more money. But at the end, all of them are making quite a lot of money. So, it's kind of like that. You start as an unpaid songwriter, just writing songs. Maybe you make a dollar off DistroKid in like 2 years or something like that.
Good on you, man. Take it.
Yeah. But eventually, with repetition and iteration, you can achieve mastery. And I would imagine the people living in that band or in that band of knowledge, of understanding, of excellence, there's not that many of them.
Yeah.
So, if you can get up there, you can make money. But you just have to be really committed to doing it. And fortunately for me, you know, I do have the stability of a side job. I would never recommend somebody fucking does Sylvester Stallone and sells your dog so that you can make a bargain. Yeah. Which I think is apocryphal anyway. I don't think he sold his dog. Maybe he did. But it's not failure if you get a job that can support you and allow you to have the stability that you need to write. I did it for years, man. I tried to be Sylvester Stallone because in his apocryphal story, he's like, I never wanted to get a real job because that would mean I was giving in. That mean I was giving up on my dream. It's fucking bullshit. It's a very nuanced idea and it's bullshit.
It's actually quite dangerous, I think.
It is dangerous because for me, it led to this massive instability, never having like secure housing, never like, you know, having to shoplift, do all this crazy stuff. I kind of justified that to myself as well at the time, being like, oh, this is all for the autobiography. You know, it's like ego out of control. Yeah. But really, it just meant that I delayed my truly getting on this path because of the insecurity or instability in my personal life. So, you know, I work at a bank. I've got a like, you know, good job pretty much full time. There's plenty of time in the day if we use it properly to write. If you want to write 3 hours a day every day and have a full-time job, you can do that. So
3 hours is plenty. I mean, there's people on this show that are writing more or less every day, right? Those people are doing that because it's almost the frequency you need to be at. But you're saying, how many days a week do you have? How many do you want to be writing for? What is your goal? Because everyone on this show listening, despite everyone is going to understand songwriting, hopefully, in the same way, everyone's got different goals.
Yeah. Yeah. True. True. And that's really important. It's really important to really be clear on what your goals are as well. Like what outcome. And that even works on like a very like micro and a macro level. On a micro level, what genre do you want to be working in? What artists do you really like? At a macro level, do you really want to be like performing sold out shows all over the world? Is that really what you want? Or is that what you're conditioned to think that you want? And it doesn't have to be that. Dude, for me, what I'm really interested in is mastery. I'm really, really interested in just getting really fucking good. And probably from there, all the other stuff will flow anyway, but I don't really care. All I know is that I'll be fulfilled if I live this life and get really, really good at this thing.
That's so inspiring because it's quite vulnerable to actually say that. Because I think that is a sense of conditioning to think we need to be a certain thing. But I think I'm learning to not get upset about images in my mind that are actually other people or comparing myself to like 50 people at a time when one is actually probably not even relevant, let alone 50. We need to do what we're going to do. But I understand we need to take reference from people that we love. And like you said, you're learning by writing in other people's styles. So what you can steal from that for your own, it probably just sticks to you because it is what you want to say anyway.
Yeah, exactly. The good shit sticks.
And I'd even like to know, like, how did you find the podcast and why did you start listening?
I was, dude, this is why I'm really grateful to that you hit me up and we hung out last week because I just want to be around more. Like I only work with one dude, JD Rome.
Shout him out. Yeah.
JD Rome on Instagram. Check it out. That's really the only dude that I know that is really into doing this, or that is willing to share with me that he really is. We were talking about the other day that artists kind of like to maintain their mystique and not talk about their like songwriting or whatever. But anyway, I was just trying to get around, more information, trying to make this thing real in my mind. And when I can kind of have that in my ears, I'm reading books about it, I'm trying to talk to as many people as I can, which is one and two now with you, it becomes more real. It can be a more vivid image in my mind. And when I can conceptualize in my mind clearly, it gives me a clear kind of like, I can see myself as a part of it more. Whereas if it's kind of like this dull, like I read it here, I know this dude's a song, I know like Paul McCartney did some shit. I was just trying to make it more real for myself. So yeah, I typed it into Spotify and it came up. And I'd gone through a few other podcasts, and we were talking about this last week as well, which is what I really like about this. In fact, the first messages I sent you was that it does get into these kind of nuanced conversations. Like what we're talking about now, I've not heard people talk about on podcasts at all. They're always talking about kind of lowest common denominator stuff, and not in a negative way, just kind of basic principles that can help the most people a little bit, like write a song every day. Very good advice, by the way, but not nuanced, doesn't give you any of the other kind of stuff. And so I listened to a few different podcasts with people, and it was kind of, maybe it's the analytical mind I kind of have, I'm more inclined that way, but there was something in this podcast that like struck me, that you were talking about tangible things that I can tangibly do to affect my songwriting and improve it. So that's how I found it.
That's great. That felt quite fresh as well, because I feel like you did say that very well the other day, but I think I get a context of people want to know more about it. There's people with much bigger artists telling much more interesting and extreme stories about how they sold their dog or slept on a couch. But I go, I don't think that's relevant to anyone.
Mm.
Maybe not even the people saying it. You talked really well about it. The bias of those that have already made it.
Yeah, survivorship bias. Yeah. It's like if you don't know what it is, it's the idea that in the popular sphere, the people that we listen to that give advice, they might just say, follow your dreams. That's what I did and everything worked out. But that's one in 10 million. That's the one person in 10 million that just did that and it worked out. So it's much more nuanced. And oftentimes when you're listening to people on that level, maybe they don't really know how they got there, or maybe there was a lot of luck involved. I don't know. Also, that thing with Sylvester Stallone, it's kind of like going back to that artist thing, which has always kind of annoyed me because it's him kind of adding to his mystique. And artists will do this, man. Like, that's kind of just what he wants his story to be, because it paints a good story for the person who's into Sylvester Stallone. Oh my God, he sold his dog. And then he made Rocky and he wrote it in. He says he wrote it in like 2 days. I don't know if that's true.
We can be almost fighting against the positivity of what we're talking about on our own show by looking into that. I talked about it before. Like, you don't write a song in an hour and a half.
Mm.
You don't write for a couple of weeks and it comes out quickly. That happened to me recently. I haven't written properly for months. We wrote two songs inside of 40 minutes. But actually, Ethan and I said yesterday, no, it's actually double the time, because both of us are working at the same time and communicating about it. And that was from something pent up and built up. But this survivorship bias is, I think, the reason I started the show, because I think people like yourself are not looking to sell this, like this life you've got, you've built around it, you're building relationships, you're in a great city. You don't want to sell your couch to maybe play a bar and try and chase after someone else's dream. You want to wake up and enjoy songwriting, find something in it. That to me is far more valuable and actually applicable to more people than misleading people. We're not saying it's malicious though, are we?
No, not necessarily. But it's just like these artists, they understand that that kind of mystique builds a brand. And it's like even dudes like Ed Sheeran or Taylor Swift, like they all have these stories. Like he's talking about in his book, like he slept under a bridge and did all this crazy shit. He didn't have to. His parents were rich.
Well, that's the thing, is we talked about the context, and I think we could go into everyone's story, even like Post Malone the other day saying, follow your dreams, be who you are. I went, that's true. Give everything you can, sacrifice, work really hard. Ed Sheeran, that's true.
Yeah.
But I think there needs to be, I would like everyone to be able to see their own path in other people's stories. I think you hear one story, you learn nothing. You hear 300, like I did, researching all of this.
Yeah,
I started to see the common denominator. And even luck, I'm interested what you think luck is.
It really can just be like random, really random coincidence. But you know, like this isn't my definition at all, but it's a good definition. It's putting yourself in a state of preparedness and readiness that when the opportunity arises, you can act because you've put in the work beforehand. And yeah.
That is the common factor of every definition of luck that I've found to be useful and practical. From Seneca 2,500 years ago to James the other day, who I met, and he talked about being able to capitalize on an opportunity you're presented with by having enough skill. So at the moment, you're working on the mastery of songwriting, but I'd be interested to know, what do you think is the difference between a good song and a great song?
Yeah, dude, that is the question. If I knew that, I'd be writing great songs.
True.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, we laughed about I Fall Apart by Post Malone.
Yeah.
Why does that speak to you?
Ah, dude, that track's a fucking vibe.
That's it, right? It's that simple thing of going, that's a vibe. Because we could break down the kind of choral, almost gospel harmonic stacks he puts in, and the bittersweet lyrical and production content, and the gorgeous like use of drums and tension release, all these things we talk about. But at the end of the day, it's got to be that vibe, right?
Dude, I think there is, you know, a lot of the way that I've been approaching this at the moment is very analytical, very like, well, you know, let's have a look at I Fall Apart. He's got these gospel harmonies at the start. He's kind of like the lyrical, the main theme, I Fall Apart, is kind of a universal sentiment. And the verses, they've got kind of cool buzzwords and stuff, and it's a cool melody. But at the end of the day, there's probably other songs similar to that which do not have that appeal. I think there's some level of authenticity that is coming through in that song which cannot be reproduced just by rote. It has to be coming from some, whatever you want to call it, like the muse, divine inspiration, whatever. It's some X factor that is not tangible, but which you can arrive at through practicing the craft. So the craft of songwriting being, yeah, understanding what themes and sub-themes and kind of metaphorical vehicles you use and what words and verbs and stuff. And when you can do that consistently, you start to channel something outside of yourself, something more, some maybe higher element of yourself. But
that flow state, the chess, paint by numbers, get back to your own state. Do you think when we listen to Fall Apart, we actually listen to that song inside the context of what we know about Post Malone?
I don't know, man, because I know I saw him like 2 weeks ago with the Chili Peppers, but I'd fleetingly seen some stuff on Instagram or whatever. I'd never really been into him. I listened to that other song, Circles. That's the only one I'd heard.
Yep.
So I think it was outside. For me, I think it was outside of the context. And then after that, I kind of projected context after knowing him and researching his stuff a bit more. But I think those songs, this is what I fucking love about songwriting. We're talking about this the other day, man. It is kind of, it's like, it's ageless. It's faceless. It's like, if you're writing I Fall Apart and you're 78 years old, geriatric, and you sing it like Post Malone, and it's that fucking gospel shit on it, I'm going to like I Fall Apart. I don't give a fuck. It's still a fucking tune. You know what I mean?
That hits. That's the vibration that will hit.
Yes.
And you also answer the other question, good and a great song.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, there you go.
In a way, yeah, right? Yeah. Like, I did, yeah, in exactly. A roundabout way.
That's it, yeah. And so you can probably arrive at that greatness through continuous practice of the craft, continually trying to improve your craft. And then the higher you ascend on that path, the further you walk on that path, the more access you have to that kind of divine inspiration, that authenticity. Because I guess just by the nature of doing it, you strip away, you start to understand on a purely mechanical level at first, what do I resonate? What don't I resonate? And the more that you incorporate the things that you do resonate with and don't incorporate the things that you don't resonate with into your songwriting, the more authentic you will become, the more pure version of yourself you'll be expressing.
That's great. That's very well said. And I feel like that is also, that changes, but probably only every 5 years or so. You know, you tend to probably vibrate at the same thing for a while.
Yeah, maybe.
That's really well said though. I won't even muddy it. And I want to take you to the evergreen question that is this show. Say you're 14, right? When did you start touring in bands?
I think I did my first one when I was like 23.
23. Okay. So you're 14. What do you wish you knew about songwriting in the music industry that you don't know?
There are rules. Dude, there are. All the advice I ever heard was like, just express yourself, do what you want to do. But there are rules, and you can extract those rules by listening to the artists that you like. If you listen to Post Malone or whoever it is, you will understand, like, dude, John Lennon never, like, he didn't really talk about songwriting that much, but everything you need to know about writing in John Lennon's style is already recorded. It's already on the page. You know what I mean? You listen to it. Oh, John never does this kind of harmony. So that's one rule if you want to start moving towards that. So it's like, there are rules and iteration is your best friend. Write a crappy song, then think of one thing that you can do to make it a little bit better. Next song, incorporate that. Next song, incorporate that. And over time, you will get better. And the way that you find these things that will improve your songwriting is by listening to other music and trying to use your own faculty of rationality, your own reasoning, to listen to the song and extract those principles. We're very, I guess, indoctrinated in a way to find information outside of ourselves, to read in books. And we forget that we have the same sense of reason, the same faculty for reason that the people that wrote these books did. And the essence of really good texts is that people are really seeing the world with their own eyes and interpreting that into word. And you can do that yourself. You can listen to a song, extract the principles, use those principles and write. And, you know, just fucking write a lot. That's like, that is it. Like, write a song a day. Write a song every few, or like write a song a week, write a song a month.
There we
just
go. Yeah.
Consistently and do it. Don't be fucking crazy.
Pick yours. Cause if you want to do it for 5 years, one a day is extreme.
Yeah, it's extreme. And that might make you fall off. Cause like, you're like, oh, I said I was going to do it every day and I haven't done it for 2 days. I may as well just quit.
And then you might fall into your own self-defeating beliefs.
But you know what?
Beating yourself up.
Dude, whatever it is, it's like, maybe it's not a day, but maybe it's like, maybe it's write one stanza of lyrics every day, or some minute thing that keeps you moving, some achievable goal, which is small enough that you'll be able to adhere to it and just do that. Doesn't have maybe every 2 days, maybe every week, but just something that you're consistently doing. Consistency is your friend in this, as it is everywhere in life. Consistency and iteration, and that's how you'll get good.
Love it. Wish you guys could see Ryan as well. He's like popping up and down, legs going off the chair.
Dude,
I'm
passionate about this shit because it was so painful. It was such a like, dude, it's like sifting through like sand for years trying to find these. And it only like, dude, it only ended when I'm like, I just have to fucking, I can't try to find the answer outside of myself. I can't try to see what George Martin said about how the Beatles wrote, like whatever, like just listen to the song. What is he singing about? What are the themes? Try to write something on that.
That's great. And it's also speaking to that idea of once you've done enough research in other people, how do you understand the worth of yourself and the fact that your expressions and your truths are valuable and being able to make your own choices? That's not a question. That's not like a, that's just maybe how I'm seeing it. You talked about your worth, and I'd love people to listen to this show, and provided they're working to their own goals for their own means.
Yeah.
If they are at that potential or around it, I would like people to feel better about themselves instead of us all being under this gigantic thumb of what the best in the world are doing. I'd like us all to just start to take control of it where we can. And I think you talked about how you seem to have a very lucid understanding of songwriting and the rules and the appearances and theory, right? But I feel like your growth point is that you want to build the relationships, community side of songwriting. Is that right?
Yeah, man, 100%.
What would that do for your songwriting or your life even if you had that?
It would just make it more real, more tangible. It's something I love doing just as a kind of a recreational thing as well. And I just love talking about this. I love this conversation. And it's very galvanizing to be around people that are on the same path of you as you in any context, whether that's religion, maybe like you're into race car driving. I don't know. There's something really, really beautiful and really fulfilling about being in the same, you know, on the same path, walking alongside people towards the mountain. And like on a more practical, objective level, I think that there's only so much growth that can occur within your own mind. You know, you need to be able to push up against the wall of other people's thoughts and experiences and kind of get feedback from that. And you can, it's a much steeper growth curve, I think, when you're collaborating So that's why.
That's really well said. And you're putting yourself in stressful situations. I maybe put myself in too many at once that I forget that I'm worth something in between. But what you said is, say you're trying to get to a percentage of change. You can maybe, if you've done a lot of work, only make 1 or 2% change in your own head each time you write. But you go and write with someone else, they might give you this kind of logical slap in the face where they shake up 50% of what you thought you knew about songwriting.
Yeah.
And maybe it all falls back into place, but at least you've done yourself the service of going, I'm going to see if what I've built up is worth anything and if it's going to work with other people. And I believe that you would learn a lot about your own writing working with someone else. Say you were very creative, or maybe actually you're quite an analytical person. Maybe you should work with someone who's the kind of paint-slinging hippie, where they just come in and start breathing out these melodies. They start breathing out these lyrics. You just go, wow. Like, that isn't me. That's fine. But I'd love a bit of that. That's the kind of thing that maybe you need to look for. And they'd probably be people that are a bit different from you.
Yeah, potentially, man. Like, I'm just open. I think I could learn from anyone. I think the problem I would have with working with somebody like that, and I actually do have a bit of that. I've kind of worked harder to become more of a left brain kind of. But I kind of feel like if I was working with somebody like that, that I would be imposing some external structure that I had built up, which serves me, but only serves to impede them. But I don't know.
There you go. See, we haven't even got that like singing lark in this room with us, but you've already started to go, hold on, there might be some limiting beliefs or limiting factors, right? That was a hypothetical exercise that's given you a practical thought or reflection.
Yeah.
Right? So I'm not saying that people should sit at home and imagine they have friends to write with.
Yeah.
This is not the COVID era anymore. We can kind of get out. But I'd just like to say thank you for being a part of the show. While I can see the whites of your eyes, I'd like to say thank you for being vulnerable. Thank you for being honest. Thank you for trying to think your way into something in a new way that might pull someone off. You might have dropped 7 sentences in this conversation that will stick with someone. You might change the trajectory of someone's life, you know, 1 degree, but they end up somewhere where they need to be as opposed to what they thought they should be doing. So is there anything that you want to say while you're on this show right now, on this day, while I'm in the room? Good or bad?
While you're in the room. Dude, I like those tattoos, shirt, I don't know. man, I don't know. I think if anything can be gleaned from this, it's just that consistency over time and the power of iteration and just trying to look at this stuff with your own eyes and come to your own conclusions about what works and what doesn't, in the sense that look at a song, if there's some stuff you like, if you don't like it, leave it. But the actual teacher is the songs that have come before your song. If you want to get good, listen to the songs that you love and try to extract the principles from them that really resonated with you and apply that to your own song. And you don't need to listen to somebody telling you how to write. You don't need to listen to YouTube dudes that have never, you know, just some random people on YouTube telling you how to write.
Or us. You don't have to listen to us.
You don't have to. And that's the point. Like, we've said some stuff here about like how to write or whatever, but the actual truth is, you have to figure out, it's like, use your own rational faculty to listen and extract what you like and do it. And you can do it, but it's just that consistency over time and just trust that with iterations and consistently trying to improve a tiny percentage, you will eventually make something great. And yeah, as well as that, man, thank you for reaching out. It was really good to chat with you the other week.
Pleasure's mine.
Good salad you bought, so appreciate that.
Oh, yeah. That was a good one, yeah.
Good chat, Duke of Wellington, never really been there, showing me my own city. Like, I met up with you.
You were offended, right?
Dude, I'm like, we met up and I'm like, man, I'm supposed to be showing you around. What are you taking me to this place for? I was like, going to go to the Grave Street or whatever. But yeah, man, you know, thank you for doing the podcast. It's a really valuable asset.
Yeah.
And I think it's just a perspective on songwriting that is not widely out there. These kind of raw, real conversations. It's like, often feels like there's some sort of ulterior motive or something going on with other ones. It's like, I don't know, but this is really good. So keep doing it. Doing a good job. Thank you.
I couldn't have said it better myself, and I won't ruin the ending. People, this is the kind of guy I'm proud to have as part of our community on the airwaves, and people like yourself, while I'm in the room with you, you're the reason this show can continue. You're the reason this show grows and benefits my life and hopefully other people's when they listen to this in 10 years.
Sweet. Goodbye.
Hello there, sweet listener. Thank you for listening to today's show. And I just wanted to say, we do have an Instagram. I know that some of you guys are quite interested in just sending those private emails, and I promise you they are absolute gold dust to me. And I love receiving those emails when people get time to send them with their songs, with their questions. And mainly, I love your stories about how you're listening to the show, where you found it, what it means to you. Those are the things I'll probably take to my grave, to be completely honest. But If you want to be out there on social media, please get in touch. I wish I knew that pod on Instagram. We're going to be getting stuff up on YouTube as well. Reach out. Send me a DM. Send me a voice note. Send me a video. I want to see you guys. I want to see your shows. I want to hear your songs. Thank you again for listening to the show. If you want to be involved and get full value for your creative process, please do so. But if you're one of those wonderful people that just likes to sit and observe, I know you're out there, and thank you so much for your attention. It really does mean a lot. So no need to get in touch, but if you feel like you want to be involved, please do so. Much love and bye-bye.